From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A firefighter in California has died while battling the record-breaking Mendocino Complex fire, the largest ever fire in recorded history in the state. Six firefighters have now died in the battle against the myriad fires facing the state. The Mendocino Complex fire in particular has destroyed hundreds of homes and continues to threaten to engulf thousands more. It is expected to be contained by September 1st, and this week's slightly cooler weather is helping. Dozens more fires continue to burn elsewhere in the state. Meanwhile, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said on Monday during a visit to California's fire-ravaged areas that climate change had nothing to do with the heat driving fires. He told press, "America is better than letting those radical groups control the dialogue about climate change," referring to environmental organizations that are warning about the deadly impacts of global warming. Zinke recommended active forest management as a means of curtailing fires, but environmental groups see this as a giveaway to logging corporations. My guest is Geeta Prasad. She is a senior climate scientist with the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome to the program, Geeta.
Thank you, Sonali. It's good to be here.
So, of course, taking a scientist's opinion on this matter rather than politicians' opinions is critical to our understanding of why we're seeing not just a heat wave in California, but in the entire Western United States and globally in Europe, in Japan, the Arctic Circle. There is often a lot of hemming and hawing that journalists do to ensure that no one can accuse them of being inaccurate. And so you often hear saying, while no single event can be linked to climate change, how do you link this? How closely linked are these phenomena to climate change?
Yeah, so this area of attribution science, or understanding the role that climate change is playing in individual extreme events, is a really growing area of scientists. And we're starting to get to the point where we can look at extreme events, heat waves, wildfires, and point at the fingerprint that climate change is leaving on this. And one of the things that we can already say about many of the extreme heat events, especially over the last few years, is that climate change has, in most cases, made those events much more likely to occur and also more intense than they would be in the absence of climate change. And that's something that we can say without a shadow of a doubt at this point.
So first, let's look at what Trump said before we get to what Ryan Zinke said. The president of the country posted some days ago a tweet, which is, of course, how we know what he has to say. That's generally his Twitter feed is the definitive account of what he says. And he says he's essentially blamed California for allowing the fires to continue. He said Governor Jerry Brown must allow the free flow of the vast amounts of water coming from the north and foolishly being diverted into the Pacific Ocean can be used for fires, farming, and everything else. Think of California with plenty of water. Nice. Fast federal government approvals. Now, this is just one of several tweets that he made, but he is claiming that there's, you know, just not enough water to fight these fires. What do you make of this?
Yeah, so I think if you talk to any fire scientists or anyone in the firefighting community, they would tell you that the available water is not at all the limiting factor for fighting these wildfires in California. The firefighters in many cases are using fire retardants rather than water in these situations. And at the end of the day, what we're seeing here is not a situation where an absence of water in the streams is creating problems. What we're seeing is that in a lot of these cases, increased heat extremes, especially those driven by climate change, are playing a huge role in sucking water out of the fuels. So you have aridifying trees and bushlands that can catch fire much more quickly and burn much more intensely and over larger areas as a result of these heat extremes that we can connect to climate change.
I'm so glad you put it that way. So basically, hot, dry weather for extended periods creates fuel for fires to burn, and for Ryan Zinke, Interior Secretary, to say that we need to be clear cutting, you know, and basically depriving the area of fuel, and that it has nothing to do with climate change. This is pretty disingenuous, right?
Yeah, so I will say it's not only scientifically inaccurate, but it's also deeply irresponsible to imply that wildfire risk has nothing to do with climate change. We already know that climate change is already a threat multiplier for wildfire and is going to intensify its role in intensifying wildfire risk in the coming years. And we have to be aware of the intensifying conditions that our active management strategies are going to be occurring within as a result of climate change. And otherwise, we're going to be sending our firefighters into a situation where they're essentially, we're sending them out to fight a bear with a rubber knife because we're not acknowledging the extreme risks that are coming up as a result of climate change.
Now, I understand that in California, the fires were so intense, have been so intense, that in some cases, they were forming their own localized weather patterns. This is really frightening. It feels like we've entered a new stage.
So there are a lot of ways of thinking about this as a new normal, but one of the things that's really clear is that our current conditions are not a fixed point. They are one place on an ongoing trajectory of increasing risk from wildfire as a result of climate change. So we're already seeing several ways in which climate change is affecting wildfire behavior. So for example, here in California, we're seeing that this year alone, we've had 5 times the historical average of fire area burned. And we know that climate change over the last few decades has almost increased by half the area burned in the western U.S. So that's a place where we're seeing a clear climate change fingerprints. Another place is in these extreme temperatures. The period leading up to the Carr fire saw temperatures that were more than 10 degrees above average. And one of the things that we know is that the extreme heat conditions like those that preceded Carr fires are projected in some cases to as much as quadruple as a result of climate change. And so these are all signals that we see changing fire behavior that are fundamentally tied to the changes in the climate system.
This is part of a global phenomenon, right? Because of course, climate change is global. It's not a localized phenomenon. Carbon being put into the atmosphere in one part of the earth impacts the entire system. It isn't just that those places that spew more carbon will get more impacts, right? That's something important to understand.
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing in this recent summer period is that we're not only getting heat extremes in one place at a time that are contributing to things like wildfire risk. We're getting heat extremes essentially across the entire Northern Hemisphere. And so you're seeing all of these simultaneous impacts happening. And one of the results of that is that it's much harder for us to share the resources that we need in order to fight these extreme events when they happen. So for example, places like Texas often rely on firefighting resources from other places during their wildfire season. But what we're seeing is that because of the wildfire risk that has been essentially across the whole Northern Hemisphere, they haven't been able to bring in those resources from other places. And so as these risks become more global, driven partly by climate change, we're going to start getting into these situations where we no longer have enough resources to share across all of these different places that are simultaneously experiencing these extreme conditions.
Right. So here in California, we've had to rely on prison labor to help fight fires. I understand there were several dozen people from Australia and New Zealand that were flown in to help fight California's fires. And so when all of these resources are sucked up for one summer's worth of fires, there's fewer left for all of the other needs that we're going to have, right?
Yes, and one of the things that we can see a fingerprint for climate change is the lengthening of the wildfire season to the point where in California we no longer have a wildfire season to speak of. It's essentially year round. And so you can think about how that is going to tax our wildfire fighting resources if we no longer have a down period. And we're seeing this also just on a day-to-day basis with firefighting. One of the really central fingerprints of climate change is that it's made nighttime temperatures even warmer, warm much more rapidly than daytime temperatures, even here in the western U.S. And nighttime is when firefighters typically rely on for a lull in fire activity that they can then get ahead of the wildfires. But as these temperatures have increased, we've started seeing really unprecedented nighttime wildfire activity that's making conditions a lot harder for firefighters to deal with. So we can't rely on these past paradigms for allocating firefighting resources as we move into this changed condition of the future.
here in Southern California, where our program is based, we are known for cool to cold nights because of the Mediterranean or desert weather that we are generally used to having. And you're right, this summer, the nights have not cooled off. You see the heat of the day extend into the nights, and that impacts, of course, that is simultaneously drying more and more brush, more and more trees that would provide fodder for future fires. I imagine it's also wreaking havoc on our natural systems, our ecological systems, ecosystems that that animals, wildlife rely on. We're seeing more bear sightings in urban areas, coyotes coming down from the mountains. All of these have impacts that are not easy to predict. So in the face of all of this, we have a federal government that wants to roll back emissions standards in California, which has been one of the main tools of the government to try to reduce carbon emissions, right? I know California is pushing back against that, as are other states, but how ridiculous is it for our elected officials, for the Trump administration, I should point out, to do this at this particular moment in time?
I think it's increasingly clear that as these impacts intensify, there are lots of things that we can do to manage our risk right now. But as these risks intensify, at the end of the day, you have to get back to the cause of these symptoms. You can't just keep fighting the symptoms. And we know that the cause is greenhouse gas emissions for a lot of these, for all of these threat multipliers that climate change creates. Now, that being said, there's absolutely a role for active management in preventing wildfire risk. Climate change is not the only factor contributing to wildfire risk, but it's clear that if we want to reduce the huge burden that climate change places on our already stressed firefighting and wildfire conditions, we're going to have to get to the cause of climate change. And that means reducing our emissions if we want to prevent the worst outcomes.
And the public perceptions of climate change generally are tied to what people are personally experiencing. This is true of many issues, right? When you are personally impacted by immigration, you care more about immigrants. When you're personally impacted by extreme weather, you actually start to understand that climate change is real. And we're now seeing polls revealing that a majority of Americans see this as a real phenomenon, including Republicans. We don't still hear enough links between climate change, the extreme weather, and the fires in our media, and certainly not from politicians. So there's this widening gap, it seems, Geeta, between public perception and the reality of what we're all experiencing and what we're hearing reflected back to us from those who actually have the power to do something about it.
Yes, I will say I've been heartened by the coverage of these wildfires and the role that the media has been playing in making sure that the part that climate change plays in these risks is amplified. I have been heartened by that coverage. And I think in all these cases, we would hope that people would acknowledge the scientific reality of this before these damages occurred, and that these damages would not be necessary to drive action on this. But at the end of the day, it's clear that we have to prevent these risks in the future if we want to continue to thrive.
Right. It doesn't actually matter anymore whether politicians think this is a real phenomenon or not. What are some of the ways in which adaptation can happen? Let's stay on the California wildfires. There are people who've lost their homes. A few have lost their lives. And this is, even if tomorrow we were to immediately switch over to a green economy, it will take time for our climate to adjust, if at all. If at all, there's a hope for it to go back to normal, what was once normal. What are some of the ways in which the state of California can take measures to reduce the devastating impact of these fires?
Yes, so the firefighting community in California has been very good about creating messaging around this and making sure that people are aware that there are steps that they can take to reduce the risks around their own homes by doing things like clearing a defensible area around their homes, clearing fuels around their homes, making sure that they don't have burnable material under their decks or near to their houses. And another point of conversation in this community has been thinking about the wildland-urban interface, essentially the encroachment of homes into areas that have a natural wildfire regime and that are very prone to wildfire. And so one of the things that I think you'll hear the fire science community talking about is how we think differently about managing our risks and recognizing the increased risk that comes with moving into these areas that where wildfire does play a natural role and where wildfire is a natural part of a healthy ecosystem there. But as we move into those places, the risks to the human populations increase. So we have to think about how we manage that as development continues going forward.
I'm glad you brought that up because, of course, human development or urban development, rather, is a critical part of the story, as is the notion that wildfires are a natural phenomenon. California has always had wildfires, and many scientists have confirmed that it's sort of nature's way of clearing out dead brush. And that, unfortunately, is one of the reasons why politicians also are dismissing California's wildfires. It's just something that happens in California. But of course, the extent that we've seen it happening this summer, it seems quite unprecedented. So in terms of development going into sort of wilder areas, are you suggesting that city planning needs to be part of the conversation around adapting to climate change?
So I think it's fairly clear that we have to think holistically about how climate change impacts all aspects of our decisions. So climate change obviously makes wildfires more intense and burn larger areas, but it also makes our land management choices a lot more difficult. And it's at the end of the day, it's going to be a amplifier on all of our existing management strategies. And so across the board, if we want to be managing all of these compounding effects strategically going forward, we have to be thinking about the role of climate change in all of these management decisions.
And so what is the Union of Concerned Scientists, your organization, doing to help raise these issues? You know, we hear far too often people who claim to have science backgrounds who call into question the very, very real consensus in the climate science community around global warming. But the Union of Concerned Scientists has for a very long time been unequivocal on the reality of climate science. What is your organization doing at this very critical juncture in our planet's history?
There are so many fronts on which we have to act and are acting really quickly to try to make sure that the best available science stays in the decision-making process. So at the federal level, defending these scientific processes from having the important science removed from them. That's a initiative that UCS is working really hard to make sure that we provide a backstop on the best available science in our decision making. At the California level, we're trying really hard to make sure that climate science gets into all of our decisions that are going to rely on an understanding of the reality of our climate situation going forward. So this applies to things like the infrastructure that we're building across California, the way that we're designing our water resource management. We have to be thinking about how climate change changes that paradigm. And that's a role that UCS is working really hard to fill, making sure that that bridge exists between the science that can be used to make good decisions and the decisions that are actually being made.
You've got a website where people can find out more. I know that you have some really great shareable fact sheets on extreme weather and in particular California's fires.
Yes, I would direct anyone who wants to learn more about these issues to go to ucsusa.org. And we have a range of information there tying the facts on how climate change plays a role in these extreme events, the role that it plays in wildfire, the role that it plays in water management, the role that it plays in infrastructure, and really trying to understand how we can make the best decisions around the science that's available to us today.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Geeta.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Geeta Prasad. She is a senior climate scientist with the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we've been discussing the links between California's fires and climate change-driven extreme heat. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes and our video channel on Vimeo.